Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, Bob's going to sit down with author Kristen Jensen to talk about porn-proofing your kids.
Well, welcome to a special edition of the Wednesday Conversation. On this podcast, I am joined by Kristen Jensen, who's the author of an excellent little book called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, which I will tell you more about in a minute. Kristen, thanks for taking the time to join us on the podcast.
It's great to be with you, Bob.
Let's talk first of all about let me set it up this way. If you're a parent and you're listening to this, one of your primary questions as you raise kids is, how can I safeguard my children against pornography? This is one of the most important and most significant issues of parenting in our day. And not everyone listening to this, I know, is a parent, but for those of you that are, we need to think well about the question of how do we keep our kids safe and how do we begin this conversation early and prepare our kids for a world where pornography is all around us and where they're going to be exposed to it at some point and need to have the resources to be prepared for that. And so that's the focus of this book. And we wanted to just talk about it a little bit and have you hear from Kristen. And so Kristen, here's the first question I want to know. What's the story behind this book? Why did you write this in the first place?
Well, the reason I wrote this is I saw a need, and it became personal to me because a friend called me up and told me that her 17-year-old son had been sexually molesting his younger brothers and sisters. And pornography was a part of all of this. And it was devastating to this family. So much had to happen as a result, and he was prosecuted, and the younger children all had to go into counseling, and it was just devastating. So I woke up the next morning, and I just felt compelled to look for a resource that could help a young child understand that pornography was harmful and that they shouldn't get into it, that they should avoid it, they should say no. And I just went online and I thought, oh, I'll find a couple of books because I'm sure I just wanted to find a book for her that maybe she could use with her other children. Well, I couldn't find anything. And then I started doing some research, and I thought, why couldn't this brain science, you know, this research on how pornography affects the brain and can become an addiction and even lead to children acting out on other children, which that part I don't cover in the book, but why couldn't the brain science of addiction and addiction to pornography be boiled down so that a young child could understand it? And I thought, I could do this, you know. I was probably a little overconfident at the beginning because I thought it would just take a couple of weeks to do, but it ended up taking 3 years. But that was the precursor, and that's what motivated me to write Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn-Proofing Today's Young Kids.
So here's the question I think most parents have as they approach this issue. When do I need to start this conversation with my child? Most, especially Christian parents, want to preserve innocence as long as they can, and so they'd rather not enter into this conversation before they have to. When should parents start talking with their kids about porn?
So, Bob, that is a wonderful question, and I get that question a lot. And the short answer is this. You need to start teaching your children how to protect themselves from pornography as soon as they have any access to the internet. And most children have access to the internet even at age 2 and 3 and 4. And that's why so many parents ask me to write Good Pictures, Bad Pictures Junior, which is a very simple, comfortable way to talk to even, you know, 3-year-olds about this. Just talking about, you know, what is a good picture, what is a bad picture, and the importance of turn, run, and tell when you see something that is bad, which we describe, and we can describe that later. But the other thing I wanted to say is you mentioned innocence and how parents want to maintain their child's innocence. And I would say, you know, 20 years ago, maybe you had a better chance, but in this day and age where every person has a portal to the internet, you know, to pornography in their pocket, children need to be prepared to protect themselves, to protect their own innocence. So we always say sooner is safer. The sooner you start to warn your children, educate your children, prepare your children, the sooner they will be safer.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think it's, you could even say that by having this conversation and by preparing them for this, you actually are protecting their innocence, because if you don't have the conversation, it's almost a guarantee that they're going to get exposed to pornography in a way that they're not prepared for.
Exactly. And when children are caught off guard, their curiosity really can take over, as well as they're just caught off guard. They may be embarrassed. If people say, hey, if a child comes up to them and says, hey, you know, look at this, and they don't know to turn away, then they'll be caught off guard. There was a mom that told me a story about her 11-year-old daughter who went on a field trip, and they're on the bus, and she's sitting next to her girlfriend, and a boy comes up and says, hey, look at this. He showed them pornography on his mobile device, and the young girl that had been warned, had, you know, the mother had already told her about pornography and what to do when she sees it, she turned away. She says, no, I don't want to look at that. But her friend continued to look at it. So that is the difference between a child that is prepared and a child that is caught off guard.
Okay, so you mentioned kids have a natural curiosity, and I think for some parents, here's the objection or here's the question. If I talk to my kid about porn, isn't the risk that I end up making them more curious about it? Aren't I going to provoke their curiosity? What would you say to that?
I would say that I can understand why parents would feel that way and would think that way. However, you've got two choices. You can... you know, you've got two plans, basically, right? The cross your fingers plan and hope your kid doesn't see it until the day, you know, you decide to talk to them about it. Or, you know, what I consider the smart plan, which is to prepare your child to live and thrive in this culture, in this world as it is now. We wish it were different, but it's not. So... yes, kids are curious, but that's all the more reason why we need to answer their questions, open up that conversation with them, so that when they have questions, they feel really comfortable coming to us and not the internet or their peers with questions about sex or, you know, its counterfeit, which is pornography.
Why do you think, well... why is it hard sometimes for parents to begin this conversation? And then how does your book try to help with that? Because I think, you know, I have enough conversations with parents who, you know, when they're ready to have a talk about sex with their kids, which happens later. So I can imagine, you know, when your kids are younger, there's even more nervousness about how do I get into this conversation the right way? And it's a hard conversation to have. And so why do parents find this difficult? And how does your book try to help?
Well, I understand why it's hard to begin this conversation. So I totally get it. And this, I mean, it's hard to talk about sex, let alone, you know, a perversion of it, which is what we see in pornography. But we need to be proactive and help our children be prepared. So what I realized is that parents, you know, and I've talked with people that are very educated about pornography and the problems with it, even therapists. That deal with this on a professional level, but they didn't know how to talk to their 6-year-old or their 7-year-old. So what I try to do in Good Pictures, Bad Pictures is to give parents a script with just the right amount of information and on a level that's very comfortable and in a way that's very comfortable. And that is the feedback that I get time and time again, that the books were very comfortable. That's a common thing to do, right? Read a book to your child. And I've been actually surprised at how much kids love good pictures, bad pictures. They enjoy learning about their brain. They enjoy being empowered. So obviously the books are a good way, a script. If you don't want to buy the book, that's fine. Just write out a script for yourself. Come up with some ways to begin. We do it in the book by saying there's good pictures, and we point out good pictures, and then say there's bad pictures. And the bad pictures are called pornography. Now, we don't use the word pornography a lot in the younger book. However, it's the same thing, good pictures and bad pictures. What are bad pictures? And then we give a very simple definition of pornography.
Yeah, talk about that, because I think that's really helpful.
Yeah. So, and it took a long time to come up with this simple definition. It seems so simple, but the definition that we use is pornography is means pictures of people, pictures, videos, and even cartoons of people with little or no clothing on that focus on the parts of the body that we keep covered with a swimsuit. In other words, our private parts. So that's the very simple definition. Now, obviously, as they get older, you can add to that. But with young children, all you want to do is begin by giving them a way to recognize it, right? So if they see pictures of people without any clothing on or very little clothing on, they can know that they need to turn, run, and tell a trusted adult. And the turn, run, tell plan is in the junior book. And we also have a can-do plan that's in the original book. And all of these plans are really to give kids, you know, a refusal skills, like what do I do when I see this? And parents can give them a plan so that they know exactly how to respond.
So if we're thinking age range, Kristen, the junior book is maybe 3 to 6. Is that about right? And then And then the older book is for kids ages 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there?
I would say the older book could be read to children as young as 6 or 7. There's an overlap.
Okay.
And it has a lot more words, a lot more explanation of your brains, the two brains that you have, the thinking brain and the feeling brain, and how addictions escalate. And so a lot of parents will read this and they'll say, wow, I didn't know that.
The fascinating thing is all the work you do on neuroscience and brain chemistry, though it's very age appropriate, is really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know this stuff before I started researching this about 7 years ago. So,
why did you want the book to have that focus on addiction and how it works? Why is that helpful for kids and parents to understand?
Well, we live in such an addiction-oriented culture, right? I mean, there's so many ways to get addicted to all kinds of things, right? Now, it used to just be substances. We do have a lot of substance addiction today, but we also have addictions to screens, to all kinds of video games. The addiction process, no matter what you're addicted to, whether it's a substance or a behavior, is the same in the brain. And with pornography, your brain makes the drug. And you basically become addicted to dopamine. So, which is why, the drugs were called dope in the first place. You know, we used to call drugs dope. That is because they caused a huge escalation of dopamine in the brain. And that's what you get addicted to. And that's what totally changes the brain. We need our brains. Our brains are precious. And we need them to think, we need them to feel, we need them to make good decisions. And what I learned is that they've done MRI studies to show that people who develop an addiction have shrinkage in the brain. Their brains shrink. And the part of the brain that shrinks is this prefrontal cortex, which helps us, you know, stop and think and make a good decision. It gives us self-discipline. It's where kind of we can use our willpower. That's the part of the brain that shrinks. So that's why addicts have a hard time. You know, we think, we go, what were they thinking when they did that thing, right? What were they thinking? They weren't thinking. That part of their brain wasn't being used. It was being circumvented by the feeling part of the brain, which is that instinctive part of the brain. So we explain all of this brain science in Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn Proofing Today's Young Kids. Super easy way. I've even had therapists tell me that they use this book for their adult clients just because it boils down the whole process of addiction really simply. So children need to be protected from all kinds of addictions. But tell me what 8-year-old today has access to go and purchasing cigarettes or alcohol. They don't.
Yeah.
We protect the 8-year-olds from all that substance, right? And when we find out that an 8-year-old has been given something like that, we take them out of the home, right? CPS comes and gets involved, right? Child Protective Services. And so, but pornography is the easiest addictive, I'll say substance in a sense, for children to get a hold of. Any child that has access to a mobile device can pretty much, unless there's a lot of safeguards put on it and the Wi-Fi, can get to pornography in 2 or 3 little taps. Very easy.
So talk about, from your experience and your research and the conversations you've had, how do most kids get exposed to porn? What are the common pathways or the common experiences that seem to be the ways that kids experience or get exposed to porn in the first place?
Smartphones and iPads.
Okay.
It's all mobile devices. You know, I'm sure some of them still see it on laptops, but it's mostly, in fact, I would wager, I guess I'm not a betting person, but if I were, I would wager that every school bus in America is a triple X rated theater because of mobile devices. Kids, I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of kids being exposed to pornography on the school bus. But I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you a story. I just heard this story the other day. A mom and a father brought their kids over. They were having dinner at a friend's house. And these were new friends. They just met in their church. And the little boy, 9-year-old, asked for his mom's phone and said, I'm going to go watch some church videos on the phone. And so he took the phone and went in, and then the little other little kids from my friend were sitting there on the couch with this little boy. And so this mother was concerned, and she went in just in time to take the phone away from the boy and see that he had put in the word sexy into YouTube. And guess what he was going to watch? He wasn't going to watch church videos.
Yeah.
He was going to watch pornography with little children, like a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old right next to him. It can happen just that quickly in places that you think are safe. You wouldn't think that this boy would have the audacity to look at pornography in the next room with his mom's phone. But he did. And another story of a young boy who was 9 and got into pornography. He said he would be on his family's laptop in the kitchen, but he could quickly change the screen when his mom came around and could see it. So he would be watching it right in the room. So it's very important to, you know, we want to filter, we want to do all those things, but kids need an internal filter.
Yeah,
they need to understand.
That's one of the most powerful things I think that you mentioned in the book, is because I think every parent's like, well, okay, I got filters and I got software, but you talk about the importance of the only filter that's always there for a child is the internal filter, and that's what we have to create.
Right. That's what we have to help our children create in their own minds, is their internal filter. In other words, what, not only what to do, but why they don't want to look at that stuff. Why? Because it's very, you know, we're all curious. I mean, that's kind of biologically how we're wired. We're all curious about, you know, seeing a naked body. Hmm. And so young kids are not bad because they're curious about this stuff. They're not bad at all. It's just that they're curious, and we have to teach them why following their curiosity on that particular, you know, in that way is not going to be healthy for their brains. It's not going to be healthy for their spirits, their souls, and their brains to follow that curiosity, and that we are here. We are here to help. We are here to answer any questions. You know, lots of times kids get they hear a word or a phrase at school and they don't understand it. So they come home, and if they have a mobile device, they'll do what they see us doing it. They'll Google it, right? Hmm. They'll go on,
yeah,
and they'll look it up.
That's a good point.
And so they're just imitating what they see us do. But we have to get in there and say, you know, if you hear anything at school or anywhere that you don't understand and you want, you know, come and tell me. We'll look it up together, or, you know, I will help you find the answer. So many of those phrases and words that they don't understand are sexual in nature and will lead them to pornography if they look them up themselves. So very important to have that wonderful relationship. If I could tell you one more story, Bob.
Yeah, please.
There's another friend of mine. She was very careful about her kids and very protective. And she basically did a background check, you know, of your family. If your kids were going to work, you know, be with her kids, she was very careful. And she homeschooled her kids. She tried to protect them in every way possible. However, she realized, and this was very smart of her, that she wasn't going to be able to basically shelter them completely, you know, put them in a bubble. She couldn't do that. She couldn't control everything. So she read good pictures, bad pictures to her young son. I think he was 7 years old. One day, a new family had moved in, and my friend hadn't had a chance to check them out completely. And they had a son that was his age, her son's age, came over, hey, let's ride bikes. So they were just going to go back to his house, grab the bike, and then come back and go bike riding. And so she thought, well, you know, what harm could come from that? They're just going to go pick up the bike. So she said, okay, we'll just go pick up the bike, come back. Well, when they went there to the house, they went inside for some reason. I don't know why. But they went inside, and in the few seconds that they were inside, the neighbor's older brothers said, hey, come look at this. And those older boys showed them pornography. So in just a few seconds, in a situation she thought would be safe. But the great thing about this story is that this little boy recognized what he'd seen. He went back home, and he told his mom what he had seen, and she says, you know what, I think he would have kept it to himself. If I hadn't set this up first, if I hadn't gone in and said, hey, this is, you might see this someday, I hope you don't, but if you do, this is what it is, and this is what you do, you come back and talk to me. And she said, in that way, it was actually kind of beautiful because it all went according to plan. He knew what it was, he had been warned. He knew exactly that he could come and talk to his mom about this. So many children get exposed and they face it alone. And it's a heavy burden. They don't know what to do. They can be traumatized by what they see, and we need to be there with them.
Well, you have done excellent work in writing this book, Kristen. I know this is the second edition now that's just come out. I reviewed the first edition a few years ago on my blog, and this one's even more helpful, I think. What's particularly new or different about the second edition?
Well, we have added in discussion questions because, and I'll tell you, there's a whole new realm of prevention science out there. So what really works to be preventative? And what really works, one of the major tenets of prevention science, is this relationship between parent and child and these open conversations. So we took that and we put that in our book, where we have each chapter has questions, discussion questions. And these discussion questions can help solidify, you know, the principles and the information that was taught in the chapter. And by the way, this book is set up so that it's a conversation between a mom and her child. And in the back, the father also comes in at the last chapter. And so it's really a conversation, because we wanted to model this proactive parent having this conversation. So that's one of the big things, is that we've got these let's talk questions. We also have, we've updated here and there throughout the book as we've gotten more information, as I've figured out, like, this is something that a child really needs to know. We've added that in. We've updated the science. And we have rewritten the entire tips for parents and caregivers. And we put all that at the back, so that you just get right into the book. We also have a glossary. So this is really a tool that is very easy to use and really effective, so that children and parents come together. Because if kids are just facing this on their own, I hate to say this, but most kids are going to be pulled into it. Most kids they need the parents' help. They need to have that support.
Well, and I would just affirm that as a pastor. I mean, we've had multiple situations in our church where a kid comes forward and just says to mom or dad, or even to a pastor or a youth leader, hey, I've seen this. What do I do? Because no one has had a conversation with the child. And so kids, I think what you're saying is very true, that if kids feel like, hey, this is an okay conversation to have, someone has prepared me for this, and I know what to do if I'm exposed to this, those kids tend to respond very differently than if there's a lack of that. Talk a little bit about, I know you've got also a website and some additional tools besides just the book. You're sort of, there's ways you're trying to build out resources for parents in this area. What are some other things that are available for parents as they continue to think about this?
Yes, go to our website, protectyoungminds.org. Protectyoungminds.org. This is our labor of love. All of the book sales really support this website. So we provide tons of free resources. We have a blog that we put out every week. We talk about the current threats. We just put out a blog post about what's coming up in this next year, and what to look for, what to be, so that parents can be on top of it. Without having to go and do tons of research and spend hours and hours, they can read our blog post every week and really be kept current with what's happening out there and what they should be, and the best advice that we can bring to the blog. We also have a community, a Facebook community, which it's a private, closed, so it's very secure. And you can come in there and ask questions even anonymously. If you have a situation, that's on our Facebook page. We're also on Instagram. And on our website, we have lots of free resources you can download. We have a guide, a quick start guide to get you started. If your kid's already involved in pornography, or you find that out, how do you react? So we have a whole smart plan guide for that, to get yourself ready for that time when you might find that your child has been exposed or even has sought out pornography. And if you want to help your community, we also have a guide for that. So lots of resources on protectyoungminds.org.
Well, Kristen, thanks for taking the time to talk with us, and thanks for your labor of love. I really am thankful that there's a book like this and a website like this that exists, because it's crucial and we need it. And I'm really, really grateful for the work you're doing.
Well, thank you so much, Bob. I appreciate it. You know, there's a lot of statistics out there that are pointing to how important it is that we, you know, take this seriously. And I just want to end with one of them, and that is 1 in 10 visitors to porn sites are under the age of 10.
Wow.
And if you look at just under the age of 18, 22% of kids under the age of 18 are under 10 years old. So we may want to wish that, you know, kids are not curious about this, but they are. And unfortunately, it's leading them, some of them, to become perpetrators and act out what they've seen, which kids are wired to do, on other children. So as much as we think pornography and pornography addiction is really devastating, you know, to kids and to marriages and all of that, it's pretty devastating when we see how many children are acting out on each other. One study said that 65% of children are sexually abused by other children. Another study that was done in a hospital where children are brought, you know, when they're sexually molested, the average age of the perpetrator was between 11 and 15 years of age. So children are watching pornography, they're then turning around and acting out on other children. So this isn't just addiction. There are so many other reasons. So if you want to protect your children from being sexually abused, or worse, doing that to someone else, again, you've got to start with helping them understand, helping them reject pornography, helping them understand why they should protect themselves from viewing that very toxic material.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the wake-up call. Thanks for the good, helpful statistics, and thanks for your work. I really appreciate it, Kristen.
You're very welcome. Great to talk with you, Bob.
Good to talk with you as well. All right, listeners, let me say a few final words to you before we end the podcast. First of all, I hope that some of you will become activists on this issue within your church community, helping other parents connect to these resources, helping become a disseminator of these kinds of resources. This is going to be a very live issue for parenting in the 21st century, and as Christians, we need to be proactive on this. So see that as an invitation. Second, I don't know about you, but when I hear Kristen tell the stories that she does and share the statistics that she does, I can easily become discouraged and feel like, man, this is a losing battle. Let's not, however, become discouraged, because I think the beauty of a proactive approach is let's be the kind of people who hope for and pray for that by leading our families and our children well in this area and preparing them for this, we can actually become formers and shapers of virtue, and that our kids can become leaders, virtuous leaders, courageous leaders, rather than being a statistic or being a sad story, that our children could be the people who are helping among their peers to change opinions on this issue and to chart a different course for the future of our country and our society. So, but as Kristen said, this is going to be a live issue for you as a parent. And I hope that this book and that this conversation with Kristen and that website will be helpful to you as you seek to think about, how do I porn-proof my kids? How do I give them a proactive strategy and prepare them so that they're not degraded by this kind of material? You know, the toxic thing about porn is that it can start with just curiosity, but it is quickly, porn goes in dark directions always. It never stays at just curiosity about nudity. It always goes to very, very stark, dark kinds of exploration. And so that's the trajectory that kids can get on if we don't help them have a proactive strategy to avoid porn and don't open up a healthy conversation about these things with them. So I hope you'll hear this as an invitation to that so that we can maintain the beauty, the sanctity, the glory of sexuality the way God meant it to be, the way God designed it to be. Let's aim for that, hope for that, and be strategic about that. Thanks for listening.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from our listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.